following paid program does not represent the views of North Shore 104.9.
Welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. This morning during the program, your host, Mark Friedman, may discuss specific financial planning and investment ideas. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Financial planning and investment advice is offered through Friedman Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, a member of FINRA and SIPC. Friedman Financial is a separate entity from LPL Financial. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Always consult a certified financial planner professional, qualified attorney, or tax advisor prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you.
Listeners to this radio show should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the mutual fund, variable annuity, and variable annuity subaccounts. To obtain a prospectus, you may contact Friedman Financial or your financial advisor. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making a potential investment.
And now, here's the host of Dollars and Cents, Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial.
Good morning and welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, right across the street from the North Shore Mall, and just above Daniela's Restaurant. I was about to say Alto Forno, but it's now Daniela's Restaurant, soon to open next week. And I need to apologize to everybody who's listening into the show. Last week, I was live in studio, and I had suggested that Daniela from Daniela's Restaurant would be joining me for this week's show, but I was wrong. She's joining me next week, because the following Monday, I think it's November 9th, that's when the restaurant will open and she will be joining me then. So we'll look forward to having her here. I can smell the food that they're testing downstairs. They've done such a great job. And we're looking forward to being regular customers at Daniela's. Anyways, as you well know, last night, Halloween. How'd you do? Did you get a lot of trick-or-treaters? Was it a different kind of experience? It was cold, wasn't it? I mean, who wanted to be outside for Halloween last night? It was cold, and I don't think the number of kids was certainly nearly as abundant as it's been in the past. But nevertheless, Halloween's always a great, great time to celebrate with the kids, to be part of the family, to get to meet some of your neighbors, in fact. I mean, we've been so socially distant over the past several months. It was nice to even greet some of the neighbors, even though we still had masks on, just to say hello and just connect with people. My goodness, we've got to still be responsible here. As you know, the numbers are ticking up all around the country here. We had something, I think it was 80,000 cases have been the daily count over the past couple of days, which is certainly a very big number, a little bit more than what the high numbers were back in July. But something that might be of interest to you, and I thought I would share this, is some of the counts actually went back in. Back in July, July 7th, I get this report that comes twice a week to me. It was July 7th to July 21st is when we really had our highest numbers here in the United States. And we were getting cases somewhere around 60 to 70,000 a day. But what's rather interesting here is how many tests were being done then in July and in August. Well, that number was just around 750,000 tests being done with 60,000 people testing positive. Certainly, we didn't really have our arms wrapped around what this virus really meant. We didn't have the treatments and therapeutics and an understanding of the virus. Those numbers were very high. But certainly, we're hitting this number of 80,000 today. And should we be concerned? Of course we should. I mean, we certainly don't want our numbers to go up. But I think it's also important to note that we're no longer testing 750,000 people a day. It's over 1.2 million people that are being tested every day. And in some cases, just so you all know, many of the schools, many of the sports programs, some of these kids are getting tested daily. There's a section, no, it's not, it's probably insignificant, but there are false negatives, of course, false positives, I should say, that have come across. It is still something of significance. Some of the people that are being tested positive go in 3 days later and test again who are positive, and they come up as a positive number on this list. So I do think, are we managing this? Yes, I think we're managing it. Certainly the percentage of people that need hospitalization, the percentage of people who are dying from this virus right now as compared to earlier on in the year is significantly smaller. Yes, the number of people going into the hospital has increased because there's more positive cases, but the percentage of hospitalizations, the percentages, they are much lower. What to me is of greater concern right now is looking overseas, looking over to Europe and asking ourselves, do we want to be like them? See, this past Saturday, maybe many of you know, I traveled in a group called Up With People back in 1985 to 1986. We were 150 students between the ages of 18 and 25, traveling all around the world, building bridges of communication between people of all nations through music, through community service, etc. I actually happened to do the Super Bowl halftime show when the Patriots played the Bears. Super Bowl 20, we did the halftime show that year. I was the guy in the yellow sweatshirt playing the keyboard. If you go to YouTube and type in Super Bowl 20 halftime show, you'll find me because I'm there with the yellow sweatshirt. Nevertheless, on our Zoom call, we have a reunion call periodically through Zoom, and we had people on the phone from Holland, from Great Britain, from France, from Belgium, from Ireland, and of course, all around the United States as well. And actually some people from South America and from Canada. And when we began talking about COVID, you know, they hear about America and they hear about the challenges that we're having, but they say, your challenges are nothing like the challenges we're having. You see, in France, they're having 30,000 cases a day, 30,000 cases. And they have 1/10 of the population we do. Same thing in Great Britain, same thing in Germany, same thing in Ireland and Belgium and Holland. There was a woman on the phone with us from Holland, and she told us that they have all of their restaurants, their bars, their fitness facilities, any type of large gathering spots, they are shut down now until December 1st. Angela Merkel just announced this past week that Germany is following the same path. Effective November 1st, restaurants, bars, large gathering places, shut down. Now, we're not doing that here yet. And I hope we don't get to that point. Because I actually think from a retail establishment, from a restaurant standpoint, I think we as Americans are doing pretty well. Though, you know, the scope that we see is our own neighborhood and our own circle of friends that we hang out with. It's those house parties. It's the sporting venues. It's when the kids are getting together for football practice or soccer practice or sneaking out of the house. A lot of these high school and college kids sneaking out and holding these parties, these large gatherings. Frankly, some of these are also happening in larger gatherings, like in a church service. Those are the places where we need to begin to better take responsibility for what we're doing, because I'd hate to see restaurants shutting down right now. I think they are doing such an exceptional job managing this. And I know, like you do, we want to get together. You know, we're just getting tired of this virus, but we know we have to manage it. And when we manage it, our numbers get better, and we also get closer to a vaccine or a treatment. You see, here on Dollars and Cents, so where we provide financial advice in a language you can understand, I know that some of the leading issues on your mind are, how are we going to get through this election? How are we going to manage through finding a solution to this vaccine? And also, what's going to happen with the stimulus? So the election, the vaccine, and the stimulus. Those are the three critical pointers right now that will move this market, that will move the economy, that will move our impressions about what's going on. It'll move everything. And I think we need to rank those three. What's most important to you? And here you are listening to me on November 1st, the election. Just two more days away on Tuesday. What is most important for our economy at this point? Is it the outcome of the election? Is the outcome of a therapeutic or a vaccine or both? Or a stimulus package? What's most important? I'll tell you, I think the least most important, and this may shock you, the least most important of the three is the election. Really, the election is not that important. Look, I think right now, and I don't know what the outcome of the election is going to be, and you don't know it either. But my guess, my gut, tells me that Joe Biden wins the presidential seat. He wins the White House. My gut also tells me that the Republicans will hold on to the Senate. And of course, the Democrats will continue to hold the House. If all of that happens, and that is what the market is expecting to happen, we continue to have this continued pace within the market. You're not going to see wild swings of anything. Now, what you've been seeing over the past few days, over Wednesday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, this past week, which has been exceptionally volatile and may still be volatile on Monday and Tuesday, is the sense that there's a lot of uncertainty right now. All of the things that we thought were going to happen as it related to the election are all being questioned. Everybody is doing their very best, last push, to try to convince you why certain people will win the election, what the leanings are going to be, what the polling is going to tell us. So it's going to be a little shaky for a while. But I think, folks, if we can get an answer on Tuesday, and I'm not so convinced we're going to have an answer on Tuesday, but once there is some clarity, uncertainty on what the landscape of Washington will look like following this election, then we can better understand the direction and trajectory of the market. But in reality, the direction and trajectory of the market based on the election, to me, as far as I'm concerned, is really not that significant. What is significant is the virus and a solution to the virus, as well as coming up with a stimulus package. When we get back, I want to talk to you a little bit about that. I want to talk to you about the implications of the stimulus, of a vaccine and a therapeutic, and also of some of the implications about what we're hearing about these elections right now. All of this is very important, and I know it's on the minds and the concerns of so many people who are asking us, Mark, what are you doing at Friedman Financial? What are your plans? Well, this past Thursday, we held a video town hall to talk to our clients about what our plans are, what we're doing, and what our thoughts are. And I want to share all of that with you. But before we take a break, I'd encourage you to sign up for our free weekly newsletter. It comes out every Friday at 10:30 in the morning. It's called Planning Pointers. Go to my website, friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Go to the bottom of any page. Put in your name, your email address, and we will get you registered and join the 7,500 other subscribers who get our newsletter every week. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we're back, I got more financial advice in a language you can understand. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
This is Mark Friedman, president of Friedman Financial and host of Dollars and Cents, heard here every Sunday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. Each week, I try to provide listeners with financial advice in a language you can understand. And much of my advice comes from real-life situations that happens in my office, Friedman Financial, each and every day. You see, at Friedman Financial, we help individuals and families create smart strategies for spending money in retirement. Our approach is committed to placing your interests first. And best of all, Friedman Financial is independent, and we're a fee-based financial planning and investment management firm. We're absolutely committed to helping you get your financial house in order. When you're ready to get serious about your financial planning needs, give us a call at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108, or on the web at friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
It's not about the money, money, money. We don't need your money, money, money. We
welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, right across the street from the North Shore Mall and just above the soon-to-be-opening Daniela's Restaurant at 41 Cross Street. There's only two businesses at 41 Cross Street. Daniela's on the first floor, Friedman Financial on the second floor. And we've been providing financial planning and investment management advice to individuals and families all throughout the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and the southern New Hampshire area since 1968. My father started our firm all the way back then. I was 2 years old when he started it, and Dad retired in 2007. I joined the firm in 1991, took over ownership of the firm when Dad retired. A couple weeks ago, you heard Marion Gilman on the radio, and she has been my business partner, for a good number, 10 years or so, but she's been with the firm for 20. You also heard Christian Karcher, who is our certified financial planning associate at the office, and Christian has done some great work. I continue to get so much great feedback about the work that Christian did on our radio show a couple weeks ago, and I'm hoping to have him back on here very shortly. I also told you last week when I was live in studio that I was going to have Daniela from Daniela's Restaurant on this show this week, but I lost track of my calendar. I was wrong. She's actually going to be on next week because Daniela's will be opening on the 9th of November. Hopefully I'll be one of the first people in there to get something to eat. And she's so excited to tell you what's going on at Daniela's, how you can visit the restaurant, the different types of foods that they'll have. It's going to be different from what Alto Forno was, for sure. It even looks different inside the restaurant. And I think you'll be very excited to hear about that. Look, we're two days away from Election Day. Are you tired of all the ads? Yes, I am. Are you tired of all the banter back and forth through your social media feeds and the dialogue back and forth with your friends? I am. If you think it's going to end on Wednesday, I don't. Sorry. I don't care who wins. That banter will not end. It's just going to continue to happen. And frankly, we may not have an answer on Tuesday, which is unfortunate, I think. I don't know how you feel about the mail-in voting, the mail-in program that they've done here in Massachusetts or around the country. I frankly wasn't a fan. I think we have a great absentee ballot system. I think we also have a way to get to the polls. But like other states and other areas, have you ever stood in line, like a long line, 2 hours, 3 hours, in line to vote? I never, ever had that experience. I'm 54 years old, never had that experience. I walk in, walk into the polling booths, and I vote. No problem at all. I actually did vote early this week. I voted on Tuesday. I went to the senior center in North Andover, Massachusetts. I'm sorry, on Monday, I went to the senior center in North Andover, Massachusetts. Walked in there. Voting was very efficient. No problem at all. So I don't mind this early voting thing. I do have a bit of a problem that we can vote almost a month and a half before Election Day. That seems a little extreme to me. I think if there's going to be debates, if there's going to be banter and understanding of the candidates and all of that, I think all of that needs to be taken care of. They make their statement, they make their closing arguments, and then we have, let's say, 2 weeks to decide. You get out, you can go ahead, let them go out and hold their rallies and hold all of their gatherings and stuff afterwards. But for the two people to go head to head, to talk it all out, that needs to finish, as far as I'm concerned, before your decision is made. So one of the things that's really interesting, and I don't know if you've read this at all, is that there has been some discussion about what if I mailed in my ballot and what if I sent in an absentee ballot and now I've changed my mind. Really? Well, believe it or not, there are almost six states that allow for you. In fact, I have it here. I have, it's somewhere in one of my reports that I have. I thought I had the actual page here. There are six states where you can actually do that. And Connecticut, a close state to us, is one of them. But that's all based on county. You can still do it in Wisconsin. You can still do it in a few other states. You could have done it in Minnesota, but they closed that opportunity last week. Now that's adding even more confusion to this whole thing. Basically, if you voted for one candidate and you say, I want to change my mind, and you vote for the, can go back in and change for the, vote for the other candidate, have you invalidated your voting? Have you just kind of made it a zero? I'm not quite sure how they manage that, but it is actually allowed in certain states. I think it's kind of interesting that we have 65 million people who have already voted in this election. Well, this was as of Thursday. That's where I'm getting my number from. 65 million people who have already voted in this election. We are expecting, typically we would have 139 million people vote. That's what we've had historically, past year or two. So more than 50%, almost 50% of the people who expected to vote on Thursday have already voted. But what's interesting to me is, do you know how many Americans are eligible to vote? There are 240 million Americans who are eligible to vote. Now, there are 257 million people who are over the age of 18, and 240 million of them are eligible to vote. Yet last year, or the last election, 139 million people came out to vote. Now, that's a big number. I mean, that's 139 million people, but there's still almost 40% of the population that's eligible to vote that doesn't. Did you know that in Australia, that in Brazil, it's a requirement to vote? In Australia, it's a $20 fine. You could find that. In Brazil, if you don't vote, they will pull your passport, so you can't travel. Do we need to do that in America? Should we mandate people to vote? I mean, I think we've learned from this COVID-19 that trying to make people do anything is not something that's easy to do. But I still find it fascinating with the amount of money, the amount of money that has been spent this year on getting out to vote, getting people to really go out and make their statement, do their civic duty. How much more, how many more people do they anticipate will vote this time rather than last time? Last time it was 139 million people. Well, the estimates, they're expecting 150 million people to vote. Now, would that be the largest number of people that ever voted? Yes. But it's a 7% increase. A 7% increase with all of this effort that we have done to get people to get out there and vote? And who will be that 7%? I think those statistics will be interesting. Was it the younger population? Was it an older population? Was it the Hispanic community? Was it the Afro-American community? Was it single white mothers who live in suburbia? What will the numbers be, and where will the regions post that certain more people came out to vote? I think those will be fascinating statistics. So what's interesting is in 2016, when Donald Trump battled against Hillary Clinton for the White House, there was a 60% eligible voter turnout, 60%. But the most we've ever seen as a voter turnout in the modern age happened in 2008, which was Barack Obama versus John McCain. 61.65% of the population came out to vote. What's the lowest in modern age? In 1996, Bill Clinton battled against Bob Dole, and 51.7% of people came out to vote. We're expecting a voter turnout somewhere around 63%. It still doesn't seem like an exciting number to me. I was hoping we were going to have an 80% voter turnout, 85%. Has that ever happened before? Yeah, believe it or not, it has. The highest number happened in 1876, when Rutherford Hayes defeated Sam Tilden for the White House. 82.6% of eligible voters voted. Now, granted, back then, women couldn't vote. It was just men voting. When Abraham Lincoln defeated Stephen Douglas and John Bell and John Breckinridge, 81.8% of eligible voters turned out to vote. It's the 1800s where those numbers really, really spiked up. So think about this. So it was 81% then, but now we've had the opportunity, women vote. This is after slavery. So people that had been, certainly the more people in our community could vote. So why aren't we? Why aren't we getting out there with the vote despite the millions and millions and millions of dollars that are being asked for people to do it? I'm hoping, I want to be surprised on election day. I want to find out on Wednesday morning that we blew the numbers away. It wasn't 150 million people that showed up, but maybe 200 million of the 240 million eligible voters. That'll be exciting to me. It's not about the outcome of who won. It's about the fact that we put our voice out there and we spoke as a country about where we collectively are using our democratic voice to make some statements. In the first segment, I talked to you about the fact that there are three triggers right now that will help guide what the future of economics will be, at least in the near future, in the next year or two. Those three things are the election, a treatment or vaccine for COVID-19, and thirdly, the stimulus. And I told you in the first segment that I think the least important of the three right now is the outcome of the election. I think the most important thing right now is a vaccine or a working therapeutic or treatment. Look, if we can get that, if we can have some confidence that things aren't going to get worse, that even if people do test positive, we have a treatment or a vaccine to cure that, my goodness, we can go back to life again. We can go back to baseball games. We can go back to the theater. We can go back to work. We can go to a movie theater. We can eat out and we can have weddings and celebrations and conferences. We can go on cruise ships. We can gather in large places. That, my friends, is where we have to go first. When that happens and when people are spending money and businesses are coming back and hotels are filling up and conferences are happening and business travel is occurring and we're going on vacations with families, people spend money. And when we spend money, what does that do? That stimulates the economy. And when the economy is stimulated, it means we're buying products manufactured by American and international companies. And when we're buying things, that makes them more profitable. And the stock market goes up. Your 401k grows. Your 403b grows. And what else you get? The stability of your pension. Many people will talk about the fact that, man, Mark, well, I'm not worried about the stock market. You know, they talk about, all Donald Trump wants to talk about is the stock market. Well, stock market is important to all of us in a lot of different ways. Even people who are teachers, people who are working with companies that provided them a pension. If you're getting a pension, where do you think the company that is funding your pension is putting the big amount of money? What do you think? They're just putting it in the bank and they're just paying it out to you? They're just taking somebody's money and giving it to you? No, they're investing that money. And where are they investing it? In the stock market. Now, they're investing it in the bond market too, and perhaps in alternative investments and all sorts of strategies. But they're investing it because they believe that they can make money with what they place in so that they can continue to pay you your ongoing pension. It's the same thing that happens whether you're putting $10 into your 401k or $20,000 a year in your 401k. Those monies are feeding into the stock market, and millions of us are doing it. And I think it's important. We need to continue to support the stock market. We need to stay invested. We need to do this. It is where, look, leaving your money in the bank, and we've gotten plenty of calls from folks that have said, Mark, you know, geez, days before the election, should I just pull out? Well, I will tell you, in my 29 years of doing this business, I've lived through 9/11, I've lived through the financial crisis, and I've lived through plenty of other fluctuations in the market. Never once in 29 years, and frankly, never once in our firm's 52-year history, have we ever suggested that our clients cash out. Because every single time the market hits a dip, it goes on to hit newer highs. And I don't care how old you are, as long as your strategy aligns with your financial plan, and you need that financial plan to help you along with that investment strategy, you are going to be good to go. You want to be rational in emotional times. You don't want to be speculative. All right, so I've talked about the election, the impact of the election. I've talked about the importance of us finding a vaccine to help stimulate this economy. Let's talk about the stimulus. Let's talk about the stimulus. Why isn't it happening right now? And when will we actually get a stimulus? Or will we? We'll be right back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. Hi, this is Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial. For more than 50 years, we've been providing individuals and families on the North Shore and Merrimack Valley with financial advice in a language you can understand. As each of us struggle to find answers in this uncertain environment, we're continuing to communicate with our clients in a variety of ways. Our weekly newsletter, our video town hall, our client teleconferences, and periodic phone calls continue to offer ways to address clients' questions despite remaining physically distant. If you're feeling alone and searching for rational advice during these emotional times, perhaps Friedman Financial can provide the comfort that you need. Give us a call at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Or visit us at friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Friedman Financial, financial advice in a language you can understand.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
Money, 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 money.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, right across the street from the North Shore Mall and just above the soon-to-be-opening Daniela's Restaurant. I hope you're all doing well. I hope you all enjoyed Halloween last night. I hope you're warming up because it was cold outside last night. Certainly the numbers of kids out trick-or-treating weren't nearly as large as we've expected in years past, for a number of reasons, of course. But still, it's fun. I mean, I don't know about you. As you drive around your neighborhood, you know, years ago, people started decorating their houses up for Halloween. I know we had all the blow-ups in front of our house. My kids love the blow-ups. In fact, in our old house, people used to drive by our house because we had so many blow-ups. But is it me, or are people making the front of their houses far scarier? They're like gruesome decorations people are putting up in front of their houses. It's not the friendly Mickey Mouse holding a jack-o'-lantern in his hand anymore. I mean, the skeletons, the gore, the agent of death, whatever might be there. It's been some of the scariest stuff. I mean, it is spooky to go out there. Granted, it was a little cold last night, so I think people stayed in, but driving through the neighborhoods and watching what some people have done, and people have gotten very creative. Frank, look, Halloween has become a billion-dollar industry. It's amazing. I remember when I would go out trick-or-treating, remember we used to have the little UNICEF box? And we'd go out and people would drop pennies into the UNICEF box or dimes into that box, and they'd hand you a Dum Dum lollipop or Smarties or a little thing of candy corn. We've certainly all stepped it up. I know we are a full-size candy bar house, but I think we're competing with others in the neighborhood. It feels like everybody does the full-size candy bar thing. And look, they're easy enough to get at Costco or at BJ's, and that's what we've been doing. But, man, nobody wants those little white and red Starburst little mints anymore. It's been different. And then some people say, you know what, we're not doing candy. We're going to give apple slices, packed apple slices, or pencils, or something like that. Look, everyone's being creative. So I'll tell you something that we did for Halloween. We set up a table because, you know, you're supposed to be the socially distant kind of thing. We're friendly, of course, and we'll get the kids what they want. But we set up a table, and I had three domes on the table, and the dome covered three different plates. And so as each kid would walk up, I would say, which dome would you like? And so I was only touching the tops of the dome that I would lift up, and then they could grab the candy. So I would have two tricks and one treat under the dome. So we might have Skittles under one, a Milky Way under another, and a can of tuna fish under the third. And so the kids were a little surprised when I would lift it up and it was a can of, you know, Charlie by the Sea tuna fish. And, you know, we'd laugh it off. I didn't make them take the tuna fish, of course. They could have the candy that you want. The biggest risk you run, you lift up the top and it's a Reese's peanut butter cup and they say, I'm sorry, I'm allergic to peanuts. I know what that's all about. I got two kids that are allergic to peanuts. So, you know, you got to accommodate, but we had fun with it. And that's what we did to make it at least a little entertaining. When we last left, though, I was talking to you about the three critical pieces that we need to be aware of as we head towards the end of this year and into 2021. The election being one, a therapeutic or a vaccine being number two, and the stimulus. But if I rank them in order, I think a vaccine or a treatment is absolutely number one, the election, number three, and number two is the stimulus. Look, when we get a vaccine or whether there's a solid treatment where we can feel comfortable about getting back to life, the market is going to explode. I have no doubt about that. We're going to spend money. We're going to want to go out. When's the last time you got excited about going out shopping? I mean, you do it online, right? But I want to go back out and shop. When's the last time you bought clothes? Clothes that you could actually touch, that you could try on to do. I want to go out and do that stuff. When's the last time you went on a vacation and bought souvenirs and, you know, went to a hotel? We're going to spend money as soon as we're comfortable to do so. But in the interim, there's a lot of people who are still out of work. And a lot of people who are truly struggling. And frankly, I blame Congress and the Senate for not being able to figure out a way to work out a strategy where we can allow the American citizen, those who have really struggled with their jobs, those that are in the service industry, those that are in the hospitality and entertainment industry, how do we get some money to them so that they can feel like they're appreciated even, so that they can have money We need to figure out a stimulus for them, and we need to figure out a stimulus for the small business owner. You know what? I think as much as the restaurant industry has struggled, and yes, many restaurants have had to close, and that's unfortunate and terrible, but there are many other restaurants who became creative. They figured out ways to incorporate takeout into their operation. They used outdoor seating, which now is getting limited with the winter coming. They've been thoughtful in the way they've been able to manage their stuff, but they still want to get back to full capacity and working again. It's the retail shops that have really been hurt. We need to figure out ways to get the theaters back open, to get the stadiums open, for us to get back to normal, and a stimulus for those people whose time has not yet come and may not come for a few more months is critical. But what was also interesting and encouraging, frankly, from the first stimulus package that came out, the savings rate in America went up 30%. People were as frugal as ever. They were saving money because they knew that times could be tough for a while. But all of that saving that they did is now getting spent because they were hoping that the stimulus would continue. And unfortunately, they need to pay their rent. They need to put food on their table. They need money. That's how we all survive. Now, there is a large percentage of this population who has not been impacted by it. And we've felt, frankly, some benefits. Look, my industry, the healthcare industry, there's a bunch of industries that have actually, I don't want to say benefited, but have not been impacted so harshly from COVID-19. But as politicians, we need to recognize that we are a country of red states and blue states, of all Americans, and we need to take care of everybody here. We got to figure this out. And I will tell you, when we do figure it out, that's going to help this market and help the economy too. Now, here's my feeling. With an election just 2 days away, if I'm the Democrats and I'm feeling good about Joe Biden winning this election, and I feel that there's a potential for the Democrats to take over the Senate, I wouldn't want to have a deal right now, frankly, because if I could have the blue wave, they call it, I could probably get a stimulus package far greater than the one that I'm asking for now. Now, that's not helping people, boots on the ground people, but potentially it could be better. Look, we've been talking about a $2-point-something trillion bill, a stimulus package. I wouldn't be surprised if there is a blue wave, that there's a $5 trillion package. A package that is so large that Americans feel good. And when Americans feel good, what are they going to do? They're going to spend money. They're going to get back to work. They're going to start doing things. And that will benefit the economy. But in all truth, folks, I think I shared with you my personal perspective. And I thought for sure Hillary Clinton was going to win by a landslide in 2016. So what do I know? But I'm going based upon the information that I've gathered from a variety of Washington experts. And my gut tells me that Joe Biden wins this election. Not by much, by the way. He'll win it huge in the popular vote. But I don't think he wins it by much on the Electoral College, but I do believe he wins. But I also believe that the Republicans hold on to the Senate. And that brings us back to where we were today, with an inability for people to move. And we need to get past that. And as American citizens, we can do better. And I hope that we're all going to tell our congressmen, our politicians, our senators, even our new president, whomever that might be, that we need to work together as a country. We need to get ourselves out of this mess, because we are the greatest country in the world, and we have the ability and the resources to do that. We can be creative. We can work together. And I'm excited about whatever the outcome is, because I believe that we will come together in some of the most darkest times. There are better days ahead, and I actually believe they're coming sooner rather than later. That's my thought on the election. I hope you all get out and vote. I think it's very, very important for you to have a voice, for your kids to have a voice. And here's one of the things that's interesting to me. My sons, Jerry and Noah, are off at college. Both of them got absentee ballots. Noah sent his in right away. Jerry, who's down in Florida, decided he's not going to send his back. And I said, Jerry, why aren't you going to send yours back? And he says, because, Dad, the decision's already made in Massachusetts what's going to happen, so it doesn't matter whether I vote for Biden or for Trump. Doesn't matter. He says, you know, here are my, you know, the friends that he surrounds himself with in Florida give him all the reasons why he should vote for Biden. But other friends that he's hung up with, have hung out with, have given him all the reasons to vote for Trump. And he says, Dad, I just don't care. And I said, Jerry, that's too bad. I said, you know, but I think his voice to me is very similar to so many other people his age, is that they'll go to rallies. They'll sit around and have these discussions late at night. But when the actual action of submitting your ballot or going to the polls has to happen, they don't want to do it. Something else better came along. I believe it's our civic duty, and I think it's our job as parents to do our very best to get our kids to go to the polls, to submit their applications. I mean, to submit their absentee ballots. I don't know how successful I am with Jerry. I'm trying my hardest. But I thought it was interesting that my daughter, Alana, who's 21 years old, is eligible for the first time to vote in a presidential election. And she lives in Rhode Island. And she felt so strongly about voting that she wanted to vote in person, because she's never done it before. She had no idea what to expect. She didn't know what a ballot even looked like. And so that's why I went with her on Monday to the senior center in North Andover when we voted early. And it was a proud moment for her. But I also believe if 2 years ago I'd asked Alana to go to the polls to vote, and in fact, I think we did, because there was an election 2 years ago, she had no interest. Now it matters to her. And I think there's something that comes with maturity from our kids. As they get into their 20s, as they get into their 30s, they realize how important this is as a civic responsibility. And I hope you'll encourage your kids to do the same. We're going to take a quick break in a minute. And when we get back, I want to read to you a piece that was written by my friend Steve Breen, who is a financial advisor in Denver, Colorado. He writes a column for the Denver Post. And I thought his summation of what's going on in America, what's going on with the elections and how we prepare for it, and how fear shouldn't be driving us down a path that we really think we should be concerned about. Fear shouldn't be it. We shouldn't fear fear. And I want to talk to you about that. I want to share that with you. And I also want to remind you before we go to break that we do put out a free weekly newsletter every Friday at 10:30 in the morning. It's called Planning Pointers. Go to our website, freedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Go to the bottom of any page, put in your name, your email address, and we'll get you signed up for this Friday. And of course, if now is the time for you to get serious about your financial planning needs, I hope you'll reach out to us, schedule a free initial consultation, and I'll look forward to seeing you. But I'll be talking with you in just a minute or so. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
What if you could blend the classic strategies of investing with a contemporary approach to financial planning? That's what Friedman Financial can do for you. Wherever you are along your financial journey, Friedman Financial has the skills, technology, and experience to help you make smart financial decisions. Their team of certified financial planners will deliver an independent, objective, personalized plan for you. Friedman Financial, financial advice in a language you can understand.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, right across the street from the North Shore Mall, just above the soon-to-be-opening Daniela's Restaurant on 41 Cross Street, where we have been providing financial planning and investment management advice to individuals and families all throughout the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, the Southern New Hampshire area, since 1968. Yeah, 85% of our clients live within a 10 to 15 mile radius of our office. Now, normally, our clients come here. We meet with them in the office. Of course, that's been a little challenging since March. We have opened up our office. In fact, I'm broadcasting from my office today. We are open Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays from 8:30 to 4 here in the office. We're working from home still on Mondays and Fridays. Clients that want to come in to see us need to follow a bunch of COVID protocols, of course. We're still wearing masks in the office. But we make do. And eventually, hopefully, those masks will go away sometime soon. But for the time being, wear your mask, wash your hands, and watch your surroundings. That is my advice that I give to you. And I've stolen that probably, I know who I've stolen it from. I've stolen it from Joanne McGinnis from Caring Voice, who you heard just before my show today. She allows me to use some of her stuff because she created it, and I just give her credit for it. And she is just great. I love listening to her on the radio. We've actually had her on some of our video town halls. And in fact, this past Thursday, we hosted a video town hall for our clients. We are more than 100 people joined us in listening to our perspective on what would happen with the markets, what would happen through the election, and whether people should be concerned or not. Bottom line is this: I don't care who wins on Tuesday. It doesn't matter for your portfolio. It shouldn't matter for your financial plan. And there is ample opportunity, if you're really nervous, to make adjustments and tweaks to ensure that your financial plan remains on track. But we don't need to be speculative. We don't need to go to cash. We don't need to get scared. New policies, whatever they may be, don't come into play overnight. As my father used to tell me and has always told our clients, there's two things you don't want to see made, and that's laws and sausages. Everything that would have to change is a law. And that process of making something into law takes time. And it also gives all of us ample time to think it through, to process the logistics, and make sure that any dramatic changes we need to make, or even small changes, are appropriate to your overall financial situation. So I want to share with you an article. A friend of mine by the name of Steve Barine, who's a financial advisor, financial planner in Denver, Colorado. And I've known Steve for probably 20 some odd years. I love the way he writes. I just love hanging out with him. And he writes for the Denver Post. The name of his company is called Prosperian Financial out of Denver, Colorado. And earlier this week, he wrote a piece for the Denver Post that I thought was apropos for Halloween, for the elections, for the time in which we're living today. And I thought it was so good that I thought I'd read his story. So here we go. This is written by Steve Barine, and let me know what you think. It's that time of year again, when pumpkins start appearing on porches and horror movies are on TV. Halloween is when we indulge in our fear each year. We welcome it into our homes, knowing the temporary fright is sure to pass, and then we make way for turkey and family get-togethers. The human psyche is strange, isn't it? We run from fear and avoid it most of the year, yet we seek it out on Halloween. This year, though, feels a little different. For many, the fear is more than just ghosts and ghouls, but the far more realistic fears are of viruses and politicians. These fears continue to haunt us, the uncertainty they create doing more to harm our long-term health and happiness than Frankenstein ever could. What's important to remember, though, is that fear is an emotional reaction, and one over which we have control. We can choose to either ignore and avoid it or welcome it into our homes and our lives. COVID-19 still is and likely will continue to be with us for some time. The financial and economic impact will linger in the minds of consumers and investors. You don't go through experiences like this and lackadaisically wave them off as an anomaly. Further clouding the outlook is people's willingness to receive a vaccine if and when one becomes widely available. There will be those who will either reject the idea of a vaccine altogether or simply do not trust one so quickly and readily available. Fear is a powerful and deep emotion. Frustration will abound as people try to understand how to live, work, and engage with one another safely. Additionally, we're in this midst of a hyper-partisan election. This doesn't seem surprising given the discourse of the past few years, yet the weight is palpable, and more Americans indicated in a recent poll find that it is likely that some level of violence will erupt post-election. Whether founded or not, fear is driving the actions of some and remains front of mind for many. So it seems like a good time to be scared. In the markets, this tends to correlate to increased levels of volatility. The more uncertain and nervous investors are, the wider the prices swing. But think back to another time. It felt right to be scared. Perhaps it was just 7 months ago in March. The markets hit an all-time high on February 19th, only to fall some 34% in just 33 days on news that the virus was spreading worldwide. Yet by August 18th, the markets had not only recovered, they advanced. You know, this decline was normal. What was unprecedented is the speed at which the market fell. The S&P has declined about a third on average every 5 years or so since the end of World War II. In those 75 years, the index has gone from 15 to today's level of around 3,500. The history lesson is declines have not lasted, and the long-term trend of higher valuations has continued. You know, it's hard to argue with those facts. It's important to note that since March, the news concerning the virus, the economy, and corporate earnings continues to be negative. What we learn from this, though, is twofold. The speed and trajectory of the recovery in market values sometimes mirrors a violent decline. Additionally, the market resumes its advance to new high ground in advance of an all-clear sign. Even though the picture looks very uncertain, and some might call it negative, the markets recover and they do advance. If you wait until everything looks good, you've likely missed the best buying opportunities. Using a strategy of wait and see historically means you miss out on much of any price recovery. The most valuable lesson is that markets can't be timed. No amount of study, economic theory, commentary, or forecasting could have ever prepared us for the dramatic events of the past 8 months. Instead, I encourage you to return what can be controlled. Have 6 months of your spending in an emergency reserve. Have a long-term plan designed to work through the inevitable fads, temporary market declines, and recoveries that will happen during a lifetime of investing. This works to remove emotion and fear from your decision-making. It acts as insulation from the unknown. Over the coming weeks and months, there will be much to fear. But fear is only a reaction, and we can work to control our reactions. Just like a muscle, every time we choose not to react to fear, we gain a rep, and more reps lead to more strength. But unlike the exercise, we have another option, simply ignoring the fear. Know that this fear will pass in time, and the only lasting effect will be how you choose to react to it. I thought that was very well written. And what Steve says aligns with what we've been talking to you about on this show for the past 8 years. Don't play into fear. Don't speculate. Build a strategy. Have a plan. Make sure you have an emergency fund. Make sure that you are protecting your family, that you have appropriate life insurance, disability insurance, that you're participating in your 401k plan, that you're managing your tax withholdings on your pay stub appropriately so you're not giving your government a tax-free loan. Make sure that you're planning appropriately for your kids' education. Make sure that you're talking to your children and your spouse and your family about financial issues because, frankly, they're not being taught in the schools. It's our obligation as parents to be stewards of good financial advice. And some will argue that our government is not the best steward of financial advice as they continue to build more and more and more and more debt. We know that if we ran our households like the government runs their household, there could be a problem. But the thing that the government has going for them that we don't are two things. Number one, they can keep printing money. You can't. And they will always have a stream of income coming to them through taxes. Our income stream will end at some point. We won't get a paycheck. We may get Social Security, and I certainly think Social Security is sticking around for a very long time. I don't want you to worry at all that Social Security is going away. Some of you may have the benefit of a pension, but most of you will have to rely on the assets, the investment accounts, the retirement plans that you've accumulated all over all of these years and use those assets to support your life in retirement. How will you make the smart decisions? Where will you pull money from your accounts? Will you take the proper taxes? Will you do it with a strategy that makes sense for you, that allows your money to stretch for the remainder of your lifetime, and perhaps also provide a legacy to the next generation? Will your assets be owned properly? I can't tell you how many people we see that come into our office that tell us that they met with an estate planning attorney and they drafted a trust. But I find that despite the fact that they drafted the trust, they never re-registered their investment or their bank assets into the trust. Was that you? There's a lot of people that fall into that picture. And they just assume, well, because I have a trust, I've avoided probate. But if nothing is in the trust, you've done nothing except paid for a document. Are your beneficiaries set up properly? Have you checked if you've been with a company for 30 or 40 years? Have you checked to see that the beneficiary isn't your mom anymore or your sister, especially since you've probably been married and perhaps you have kids? There's a lot of things to think about when it comes down to financial planning. And I want to be your guide. I want to be your resource that provides financial advice in a language you can understand. And here's one final piece of advice for you. If you're thinking that now is the time to buy a house or a condo or a large purchase, and you're saying, I may not do it for a year or so, but I have this money that I've accumulated in the bank or money that I want to save, and I want to find an investment strategy to help me grow that money so that when I want to pull it out 12 months from now, it'll be worth even more. My advice to you is don't do it. My advice to you is put the money in the bank, and I don't care if it earns 0% interest. It's your responsibility to make sure that you can achieve the short-term goals that you want. And by putting that money that you plan to use in a year or so into the bank, knowing that it's there, and adding and building to that, knowing that you need it a year from now, is the smartest decision you will ever make. Don't risk it. Don't speculate. Don't play into what your friends are buying or what you hear might be a great quick hit. Don't do that. You're going to be around a lot longer than a year from now, and you need to have a strategy that supports you both in the short term and for the long term. And that, my friends, is financial advice in a language you can understand. I want to remind you as we end this show that we put out a newsletter every Friday. It lands in your inbox at 10:30. Go to my website, friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Put in your name, your email address, and you will be part of the 7,500 subscribers that get this newsletter every Friday. It's an easy way for you to continue to communicate with me if you ever want to schedule an initial consultation, if you want to talk to me about your financial planning issues. And I don't know what it is, but I think over the past 2 months, the inquiries we've received from people has just been overwhelming. People are thinking about financial planning even more so than they're thinking about investing, because they realize financial planning has to come first. The strategy of investment comes second. Those are the conversations I want to have with you. If now's the time for you to get serious about your financial planning, give our office a call, 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. And that's going to do it for me today. When we're back, perhaps we'll know who the next president of the United States will be. Wishing you all the very best. Stay safe, wash your hands, wear a mask, and watch your surroundings. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Thanks for tuning into Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. During the show, specific investments may have been discussed. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Please consult a certified financial planner, tax professional, or attorney to determine what is appropriate for you. Consider your investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of an investment company before investing. That's because investing involves risk, including a loss of principal. A prospectus contains this and other information about mutual funds, variable annuities, and variable annuity subaccounts. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making an investment. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment and financial planning advice is offered through Mark's firm, Friedman Financial, which is a registered investment advisor and a separate entity from LPL. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next Sunday at 8 a.m.
Prior show was a paid program that does not express the views, opinions, or beliefs of North Shore 104.9, the station management, its employees, or staff.